My name is Ari, and I am our partner manager here at MedCurity. I have the privilege of supporting our partners and their members, and I also get wonderful opportunities to help host webinars like this. As for our speaker today, I'm very, very excited to have Amanda Hepper, MedCurity's president and co-founder, with us to break down your actual requirements under HIPAA. I'll let her introduce herself more fully here in a moment, but I wanted to touch on our goal for this webinar. Today is to bring context to why HIPAA was implemented in the first place, as well as why it has escalated in enforcement and why our environment is so maybe a little bit more stressful when it comes to these requirements. But ultimately, we will cover how you can best set yourself up for success under these requirements. There's a lot of information around this topic, a lot. So to serve you all best, we've chosen to break this up into two parts. So this first part is happening now, and we're going to strictly cover the security risk analysis as well as business associates. And then our next webinar, which will happen next month, will cover policies and training. So we've chosen to break it up like that. So today, we will get started with these pieces under HIPAA. With that, all the information, Amanda, would you mind briefly introducing yourself and jump into an overview of HIPAA?
My pleasure, Ari. Thanks so much for having me today. I have a background in technology and then healthcare technology for many years. And part of what we were doing in like the last 5 years, we're conducting security risk analyses for many healthcare organizations and just found that there was a tremendous need for a solution to help people that are so busy in practices and hospitals like everyone on this webinar. So I'm really excited and always delighted to share about HIPAA. So let's get started. Security rule and privacy rules have about 100 specific elements that are covered under the Code of Federal Regulations. And while it is complex, there's also some flexibility that can make it a bit more onerous to understand and implement. My goal today is to do exactly what Ari was talking about and break HIPAA down into some understandable bites to specifically enable folks in practices and hospitals that, again, wear so many hats with the ability to develop and or strengthen their HIPAA compliance programs. So I'll provide a brief overview, dispel some common myths, and then we'll dive into some specifics. And as Ari mentioned, we'll cover the security risk analysis and business associate agreements. And I look forward to talking to you next month about the other two areas. HIPAA stands for the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, a federal law signed in 1996, put into place at first so that workers could carry forward insurance and healthcare rights between jobs. It's now best known for protecting the privacy of patients and ensuring that their data is appropriately secured. With additional requirements added with the HIPAA privacy rule and security rules of 2000-2003, and then the requirement for notifying individuals of a breach of their health information was introduced in the breach notification rule in 2009. Also in 2009, you're all familiar with meaningful use in the HITECH Act that encouraged us to move into the electronic health record area, which led to additional concerns over unauthorized disclosures of PHI, resulting in further privacy and security regulations issued in 2013. That also further expanded the responsibility for the integrity of PHI to business associates. So HHS administers HIPAA, and it is enforced by the Office of Civil Rights.
Thank you so much, Amanda. I know we talk about HIPAA a lot, but understanding where it came from and really why it was implemented can sometimes get lost. So I appreciate you taking the time to give us context. I always say, if we know where we have been, it gives us a lot more direction on where we need to go. So there are a lot of obvious pieces of patient health information that we all know and understand, but for education's sake, could you just take a moment to give a comprehensive overview to what is actually considered as PHI?
Certainly. So these 18 elements that you see on this slide are the elements that contribute to or that are PHI. And it is any health information that can be linked to and identify a person related to health. It only refers to patients or health plan subscribers and includes one or more of these 18 identifiers. And an example I always like to give is you see photographs, full face photos on this. So if you see a photo on a bulletin board in a practice or on a hospital wall, that is considered PHI because it can be directly associated with the patient and the practice or the hospital. However, If you see that photo in the post office, it is not considered PHI.
Knowing that this piece alone truly can bring such an informed clarity to everything that comes next, now that we have what's defined as PHI as we move into the parameters under HIPAA, it can seem straightforward given our understanding now, but sometimes it gets lost if we don't have PHI defined correctly. So moving forward, Amanda, could you share who now must comply and who's subject to these regulations?
Certainly, Ari, good question. So covered entities are really comprised of three categories. Pretty obviously, all providers that conduct healthcare transactions electronically. So that would include doctors, clinics, hospitals, psychologists, nursing homes, pharmacies, which is basically everyone that provides healthcare. A health plan are those that pay the cost of healthcare. We're very thankful for them. And then healthcare clearinghouses, which actually convert health information from non-standard formats into HIPAA standard formats, or vice versa, such as a billing company. And then, of course, business associates. They are any person or entity performing certain functions or activities involving access, use, or disclosure of PHI on behalf of or providing services to a covered entity.
Okay, excellent. Understanding these foundational pieces, although they seem rather basic right now, is really important to give that context that I was talking about earlier, because the instructions that we're going to give in the coming minutes will be so much easier to understand and to truly implement in your practice now that you know what you're required to do and which pieces are required when it comes to PHI. A natural next question in this conversation seems to be, how encompassing are these requirements? These regulations pertain to different aspects of your organization. So could you, Amanda, explain the safeguards to our listeners at its core, so then we can build on that?
I would love to, Ari. Thanks for the question. So a major goal of the privacy rule is really two different rules we mentioned earlier, privacy rule, security rule. A major goal of the privacy rule is to assure that individuals' health information is properly protected while at the same time allowing the flow of health information needed to provide high quality health. So the rule's goal is to strike a balance that permits important uses of information while at the same time protecting the privacy for the very people for whom you're caring. The security rule protects a subset of information covered by the privacy rule, namely electronic protected health information, otherwise known as ePHI. So there's three safeguards in the security rule. Administrative safeguards lay the foundation for compliance with the technical and physical safeguards. Foremost, you want to have policies and procedures that are in line with HIPAA regulations and that reflect your practices. And then you want to have the evidence that you're doing what these policies direct. I have a background in project management. It's come in handy for many years. In project management, you have a plan, you execute on the plan and adjust as needed. You incorporate lessons learned, document progress, and then you continue moving forward. It's a very similar process with policy management and the administrative safeguard. Technical safeguards are the technology, policies and procedures and practices that protect PHI and control access to it. The security rule, however, is tech neutral, so they don't provide specific requirements for the types of technology to implement. The rule allows you to use any security measures to reasonably and appropriately implement HIPAA. For instance, the rule says you have to encrypt laptops. However, it does not tell you what encryption methodology to use. That is up to you to determine that. Physical safeguards are pretty obvious. So the physical measures put in place to protect electronic information systems and the related buildings, facilities from natural environmental hazards and unauthorized access. The standards are another way to protect ePHI.
There really is a reason why we wanted to slowly build up the context around HIPAA. If you haven't gotten it from me saying it over and over yet, but there are a few myths that we should probably debunk because there are a lot of opinions when it comes to HIPAA and a lot of voices that speak into this, given how big of a deal it is to make sure that it's a part of your practice. There's no surprise that there's misinformation out there because so many people speak to it. Amanda and I have the privilege of working with healthcare entities day in and day out, just like yourself. And we hear statements that let us know we definitely have some opportunities to re-educate in some areas. So we've taken what we've been hearing and we wanted to address some of those items today. So Amanda, if you don't mind sharing a few that we hear rather often, I think that would be helpful context-wise.
You know what? I totally agree with you, Ari, so I'm excited to share some of these. Actually, all of them. So how do you know how compliant you are? Well, the very first part of the security rule is to conduct a security risk analysis. Covered entities and business associates of all sizes are required to comply with HIPAA to perform that security risk analysis. There are no exemptions for small practices. And I want to add to this that hackers attack organizations and entities of all sizes as well. In fact, they are really targeting small businesses. So risks change and evolve, as does your organization and your systems. To comply with HIPAA, you don't just do it once. You must continue to review, correct, or modify and update your security protections. We recommend that you conduct an assessment annually and, of course, following any major changes within your organization, such as office moves, a new EHR system, or new hardware. These things can affect how you process and interact with PHI as well as your level of risk. And a lot can change over a year, let alone 2 or 3 years. So though EHR vendors may be certified and they can help you use their product, they are not responsible for privacy and security compliance and operations within your organization. An SRA involves all PHI in your organization, including data that is not housed in your EHR. Therefore, you cannot rely on those vendors or a single system when it comes to your SRA. Even a certified CCHIT EHR platform, you still need to perform that full SRA to meet HIPAA, meaningful use, and MIPS requirements. Security requirements address all protected health information that you maintain, not just within the EHR. And if you're participating in meaningful use or MIPS, there was a webinar a couple of months ago on that, an SRA must be conducted for each reporting period. The EHR cannot perform a risk analysis for you. And perhaps all your data is in the cloud, so you have confidence that your data is being backed up. Even if you have a fully compliant HIPAA cloud vendor, your patient data still has to go through all of your systems to get to the cloud. So you need to do that assessment. It is awesome if you have an IT team or an MSP because they should thoroughly understand your technology stack. However, as you can determine from the prior slides, HIPAA covers a lot more than technology. Also policies, sanction processes, training programs, a lot more. That said, again, IT can definitely assist with the tech portion. So checklists. I love checklists. They can be useful tools, especially when starting a security risk analysis, but they fall short of performing a systematic security risk analysis or documenting that one has been performed. And they will likely not provide a recommended risk mitigation path forward. They don't come with support staff to answer questions or help you know where to start and what to monitor. And they don't come with any other types of documents to help you start, such as policies and procedures. So the last one, I think, is one of the saddest myths. We've had people think that with their mitigation plan, once those were laid out, that they have to address everything like within a week, and that absolutely is not true. You should address all risks identified as part of your work plan and then work to correct them over time as reasonable and appropriate for your organization.
Thank you, Amanda. I know it can feel like a lot of information, but truthfully, you have such extensive experience in these areas, and your insight truly is invaluable because you see it firsthand, having performed numerous security risk analyses, as well as having a front seat to different audits. So now that you've laid a wonderful foundation with industry knowledge, as well as what we know from the federal level, let's get practical. Where do we start with all of this?
Awesome. The first thing that I like to remind people is that it is your assessment. I've been asked several times on assessments, how honest should I be? And again, it's your assessment, your baseline. The more transparent you are, the better reflection that you have of your organization, and you know where to start. So we recommend doing assessments annually or after significant changes, as I mentioned earlier, such as EHR system changes. Then you can see your progress year over year. And nothing prevents you from conducting a security risk analysis yourself. Some do that. We do recommend that you get an objective, maybe third-party perspective every other year or so. Folks may use Excel or Word tools, which would require robust knowledge around areas such as use and disclosure, storage processing and transmission of ePHI. If you do it yourself, we highly recommend using a tool such as MedCurity to better equip you. And then accurate and thorough means it encompasses all of the safeguards, not just technology, not just policies and procedures, or your facility protection, but all of the safeguard areas. And then when it comes to required versus addressable standards, both must be met. There's simply some more flexibility as to the method of implementation for addressable standards. And be sure to document your decisions regarding implementation of both addressable and required standards. So policies need to be evaluated against the safeguard areas, all of them. Remember to include retention periods and review frequency. And finally, after all the gaps have been identified, develop risk mitigation plans to narrow and close the gaps identified. So let's move on to some tips. A risk assessment helps reveal areas where your organization's protected health information can be at risk. We highly recommend, and you will be asked to do this in an analysis, to provide a systems inventory of all systems that interact with PHI, including encryption methods. If you continually maintain that document, it is going to be easier to do a security risk analysis. Need to identify potential threats and vulnerabilities. Vulnerabilities or weaknesses or gaps in your protection, such as ineffective or non-existent policies, procedures, standards, or guidelines, or perhaps even a security system that relies on electricity. Threats are the potential for identified vulnerabilities to be triggered, either accidentally or intentionally. They can be natural, human, or environmental. For instance, if you live in an area like Spokane where we have snowstorms, windstorms, you might be without electricity. And if one of your vulnerabilities is you totally rely on electricity to operate your electronic health record or have your security system active, that's a threat. Impact and feasibility. Impact is an estimate of the harm that could be caused by an event. For example, a cyber breach could have catastrophic impact, and likelihood is simply how probable is it that that event would occur. And then assess current security measures and if they are applied properly. For example, are auto logoffs occurring as thought? And review information system access logs and electronic chart audits. Remember to document these reviews as well. And speaking of documenting, document the security risk analysis. We want you to get credit for your work, and it will be very important moving forward. And of course, the assessment must drive a risk remediation plan. So lay out your plan to address gaps or deficiencies. Risks and actions should be prioritized. In every SRA I've done, there are categories that come to the surface and reveal themselves. So address those highest risk categories first. My project management background comes into play here. Make assignments with due dates. Monitor the plan. Report to your management on your progress. At MedCurity, we equip our orgs. We believe and have heard from our clients to be the heroes for their organization with pretty amazing dashboards demonstrating risk level improvements as you work through your risk mitigation plans. And always include evidence supporting that you are working through a mediation plan.
Thank you so much, Amanda. I know those two pieces, the security risk analysis and the risk management plan, they go hand in hand. It's something that we see in our work. And it's also something we see at the federal level. So it's honestly a great segue into what I wanted to talk about next, business associate agreements and compliance with business associates as well, because this is a topic we also see at the federal level. There are so many breaches that happen with business associates, and we see those headlines day in and day out. And if you aren't doing your due diligence to make sure your business associate is where they need to be when they interact with your patient information, it can impact you as well, even though it's not necessarily something you did wrong. So our goal here is to educate and make sure that you're covered, so it makes sense to talk about this. So continuing this conversation, Amanda, could you break down why business associate agreements are important?
My pleasure, and I couldn't agree more with everything that you just said, Ari. A business associate agreement, it's a written agreement that specifies each party's responsibilities when it comes to PHI. It can be between covered entities and business associates or between business associates, BA to BA. As a reminder, a business associate is a person or organization who interacts with PHI from a covered entity or another business associate. BAAs are for vendors that create, receive, maintain, or transmit PHI on your organization's behalf. So why do you need one? The purpose of a BAA is to outline your associate's responsibility to keep your PHI private and secure. The BAA also typically defines the services that the business associate is providing, the type of data that they're interacting with, and addresses areas around breach notification, such as timelines and penalties. Business associate agreements are not optional. HIPAA requires you to sign the BAA with your associate before sharing any PHI. This will help you avoid a privacy breach as well as penalties for failing to have a BAA in place. Do not roll the dice when it comes to HIPAA compliance and business associate agreements. If you hire a business associate and share your PHI with them without first establishing a BAA, you can face serious consequences. OCR can impose hefty fines and corrective action plans if you fail to have a BAA in place with them. Furthermore, if OCR audits your organization for any reason, you must be able to supply your business associate agreements and demonstrate that you've conducted due diligence with your BAs, as Ari mentioned earlier. So, do two covered entities need a business associate agreement? Well, it depends. If the relationship is based on treatment, payment, and operations, no. If you hire another HIPAA-covered organization to create, maintain, receive, or transmit PHI on your organization's behalf, then they are your business associate and you need a BAA with them. Does it matter whose BAA you use, yours or your business associate's? HIPAA remains silent on this. It is typical for the hiring organization to dictate the terms of an agreement, but it really, you just want to make sure that you review it and that it has exactly the terms that you want within it. For instance, I was at a large organization. GE was one of our vendors, and as you can imagine, they wanted to use their business associate agreement. We thoroughly reviewed it. It was fine, so we signed it. Regardless of whose version of the business associate agreement you use, your associate is liable for any breach of PHI that they cause, given that you have a business associate agreement. Business associate agreements don't necessarily need to be signed annually if they are evergreen. It will renew automatically and won't require a new signature to remain valid. That said, it is really smart to set a regular review schedule for your business associate agreements. The purpose of those reviews are to make sure that the BAA stays current with your SLA and with HIPAA regulations. I was with a payer for a while and managed vendors for them, and our cycle is every 3 years we reviewed every single BAA and, in fact, had them sign new ones.
Excellent. I know BAAs often aren't given as much attention as they probably should, but one of our roles here at MedCurity for our customers is staying up to date on what's happening real time in the industry, and this continues to get attention. So thank you for breaking down and making it digestible when it comes to why this is important and why they should give attention to it. Just as you shared some myths towards the security risk analysis side of things in HIPAA, it seems worthy to note the myths that surround business associate agreements as well. So Amanda, please share with us what you've heard.
Awesome. And I agree. There's myths around all aspects of HIPAA, so it's really fun to break some of these down and address them straight on. One of the greatest challenges that the omnibus rule in 2013 that was mentioned earlier brought forth is that HIPAA now applies to any business associate that creates, receives, maintains, or transmits protected health information. And in addition, monetary penalties for noncompliance increased highly to a maximum penalty of $1.5 million per violation. And those penalties apply to both covered entities and to business associates. So does a BAA put all of your liability onto the business associate? Well, even with a BAA, there can still be some shared liability between the covered entity and business associate. If you're breached and if it is the associate's fault, healthcare providers may still share some monetary penalties or fines with the associate. The biggest thing to remember here is that you should share only minimal need-to-know data with your business associate and regularly validate. Do that due diligence, Ari mentioned, that they are handling your patient's PHI in a HIPAA-compliant manner. That should keep your liability to a minimum. A business associate contract is not required with persons or organizations whose functions don't involve use and disclosure of PHI in order to do their job. So a janitor wouldn't necessarily need a BAA. However, I do know of organizations that specifically have their janitorial staff move piles of PHI, paper records, from desks or underneath desks in the shred bins, open shred bins, into locked shred bins. In that case, it is part of their job and they absolutely need to have a BAA.
Awesome, thank you. Excuse me, Amanda, so much for sharing some of those myths. I know there can be a lot of confusion, just like I said earlier, about voices around these topics. But I know I am one who learns by seeing what it looks like in the real world. So nothing like bringing context to a situation like this with an example. So would you mind sharing something that we've been seeing with a real-time example?
And before I get to that, I'm going to share a couple of tips. The first one that will come, I hope we're making this very, very clear, and the examples I'll share will do that. Take business associate agreement seriously, because the OCR does, and we should, because we want to protect our patients' information. We are seeing penalties for a lack of business associates in many of their settlements. So review your BAA list at a specified frequency. Maintain a current list. Keep it current all the time. Some vendors may no longer be being used, and there may be new ones. And verify, do that due diligence. Verify HIPAA compliance with them. Ask for copies of their internal HIPAA policies, training logs, disaster recovery plans. You want to make sure that they are taking HIPAA and your patient's PHI as seriously as you do. And so let's review some attributes on the next slide. So these are all important elements of a business associate agreement. Oftentimes I see that system and facility access is overlooked. Also, have your associates commit to annual HIPAA training. Establish the permitted and required uses and disclosures of PHI by the business associate, and require the associate to report any covered entity, report to you, pardon me, any use or disclosure of the information not provided by your contract or your business associate agreement with them, including incidents that constitute breaches of unsecured PHI. Really, what I am saying is that if they share or disclose your PHI in any manner not outlined in your business associate agreement, they have to report that to you. Make sure that that's in your BAA. And then at termination of the contract, if feasible, require the associate to return or destroy all PHI received from you or created or received by the business associate on behalf of you. And then a good thing to remember is that they may have downstream business associates. Require your direct business associate to ensure that if they have any subcontractors that will interact with your PHI, that they will ensure that that downstream business associate agrees to the same restrictions that you are imposing on your direct business associate. Okay, now let's get to those examples. So this is an example of a single doc practice in Utah that the settlement came to $100,000 for security rule violations. So this practice reported to the OCR that their EHR vendor had locked them out of their EHR. So the OCR investigated. And when the OCR investigates, I'm going to repeat that they look at everything. They will look at your entire HIPAA compliance program. They discovered that this practice did not do a security risk analysis when they reported the breach, which is a HIPAA requirement, nor had they ever conducted a security risk analysis. So that was not good. And by the way, in SRAs, in 90% of breach investigations, those SRAs are missing. So it's a vital piece of this. And so I just want to read this quote real quick, because we can get some really good, we follow all of these settlements. We love HIPAA, and we like to get insight on where the OCR is going, maybe what they're frustrated with, what they're going to be focusing on. And so this is a quote by Roger Severino in this specific settlement that said, all healthcare providers, large and small, need to take their HIPAA obligations seriously. The failure to implement basic HIPAA requirements, such as an accurate and thorough risk analysis and risk management plan, continues to be an unacceptable and disturbing trend within the healthcare industry. And in addition to this monetary settlement, this practice gets to be best friends with the OCR for a couple of years as they monitor their corrective action plan. Okay, let's go to the next example. So this settlement came to light to the OCR when the Illinois Attorney General reported an organization named FileFax because they had discovered this organization had disposed of paper medical records in a dumpster. So the OCR comes in and investigates. They look at everything again, and their client was someone named the Center for Children's Digestive Health. As they explored this, they discovered that CCDH had been providing patient information, PHI, from 2003 to 2015 without, you guessed it, a business associate agreement. So even if the covered entity's compliance program hadn't avoided the bad conduct of a vendor, the real trouble began when the OCR looked at the broader non-compliance issues within the organization. So I want to read one more quote. Two major cornerstones of the HIPAA rules were overlooked by this entity. Organizations must have in place a compliant business associate agreement, as well as an accurate and thorough risk analysis that addresses their enterprise-wide IT infrastructure. Our goal for this webinar is that we do not want this to happen to you. That's why we started MedCurity and why we are passionate about HIPAA. So Ari, could you share some information on where they can begin?
Yeah, definitely, Amanda. Thank you again for really breaking down the context behind business associate agreements and security risk analysis. I would be kicking myself if we didn't touch on this. This is definitely an educational webinar, but ultimately why we can speak to these areas and why Amanda has so much experience. From that experience, she also really has, with our other co-founder, Joe, has taken that into consideration as we develop out what we do. So MedCurity truly is designed to address and answer everything that she's talked about today and break this down so it's digestible for all of you. Things that includes are all of the elements under HIPAA, the security risk analysis, business associate agreements, and then next month we'll be really chatting in depth about policies as well as training. And I know Amanda touched on the support piece behind HIPAA, how crucial it is to be able to ask questions. We really build out our community here so you can get in the same room with like-minded individuals within the industry, within your life-size organizations. That's why we build out these webinars as well. But our customer support team is incredible and are here to answer questions as well. As for the actual dashboard, just a quick glimpse. I'm happy to answer other questions as well beyond this, but this is what our assessment typically looks like. This is for a larger organization. It walks you through and educates you on what the security risk analysis entails, what it asks you for. We've intentionally added definitions as well as references and citations because we want you to be confident as you start to move forward in this. We also have our work list. So we take all that data, transition it into actionable items. And you can see right here, it's a really nice way to see your risk slowly decrease as you begin to close out items. And so with all of those pieces, we have utilized the data that we sit on, right? So we want to change the narrative from checking the box of the security risk analysis and managing your vendors and switch our mindsets to this is strategic investment and it's really here to protect you. And so we want you to visually be able to see that and understand it. So we've broken down the data in quite a few ways. And this is all something that will be specific to your organization and easy to attest to if ever needing to report to your board or to your executive level. It gives that 30,000 foot level. And then just lastly, I mentioned the change in the narrative of people often see this as a cost to your organization, which at its core, yes, it'll probably cost money to get this done comprehensively. But ultimately, it's an investment to protect you from your increased exposure or increased penalties because as Amanda read those quotes by the OCR, they are looking and they are keeping practices accountable to this law.